And we're holding on some of Tess Amud Bey's The Mishnah. We talked about previously about making arrangements with animals where a person, where we figure out the current value of the animal as a baby, we give it to a shepherd or whoever to raise. And then afterwards, when the animal is bigger and stronger and ready for work or shechita or what have you, then they divide the proceeds between them. We said there's an issue of ribis involved because then, in effect, you're giving him a loan and waiting to be paid back, and therefore he's giving you something, and he's working for you. Therefore, we said you have to pay him for his time. You have to pay him schar amoloi for the amount of effort he put into it, and for the work that he gave for the food that he gave the animal. And we talked about those dinim. So now the Mishnah continues on that topic. The Mishnah says, Shamin part of a chamor. Now, previously, we talked about baby animals, which are not yet ready to do any useful work. So then you have an issue of ribis involved. On the other hand, you can do this kind of arrangement with a mature cow or vachamor or a mature donkey, vachol or any other kind of animal, or any other kind of animal that works for its keep, lemechtza. And there you can make a 50-50 deal on the proceeds, and you don't need schar amoloi or mezonah, because since he can do work with them, then therefore he, the shepherd, can actually be doing work with them in between, and therefore that is his schar amoloi, and therefore that avoids the issue of ribis. What about the babies? So we learned previously in the Gemara you can have where the mother animal has babies, and what kind of And we talked about what kind of arrangement you make with those. So, Mokum Shinagu Lachlokas of Lodis, in a place where they have the miyad, in a place where they have the minhag that they divide up the babies right away. And when we say right away, we learned previously there has to be a minimum amount of time that the baby is with its mother. We had two opinions. We said 30 days for small animals and 50 days and 50 days for large ones. Or we said small animals being sheep or goats, large ones being anything else. Or we said Rabbi Yossi had said 3 months. Anyway, so in a place where they do that, chokin, then they divide them up right away. Without, in other words, the shepherd can't be forced to say you continue to raise them beyond that time. If you want to do that, then as we learned before, the shepherd is going to be entitled to a larger percentage of the proceeds from the baby, because we said then that we have half of it, half of each of the babies belongs to him outright. In addition, he'd be entitled to a half of the half that belongs to the other guy because he's continuing to raise it past the time. Makom shenagu legadol, in a place where the minhag is that they continue raising the babies past that time together with the mothers, you got yagdilu, then they continue to raise them, and he's not entitled to anything extra for that. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, now what you could do, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying, as far as the babies, you don't have to consider them separately from the mother. Shaman Egolim Imoy, Siochim Imoy. You can calculate the value of the baby animal together with its mother, and the baby horse together with its mother. Meaning, in other words, we can consider it one big iska. Where since you have the mother and you're getting work out of her, then therefore you're throwing in also that you're going to take care of the baby. And therefore, even though when it comes to the mother, we said there's no issue of ribis because you're actually working with the animal and getting something useful out of it. Now you could argue, you could consider that and the baby a separate transaction. And then with the baby, you have an issue of ribis unless you give schar amoloi or mezonah. But Reb Shimon Gamliel says you don't have to consider it that way. You consider it all as one big transaction, and therefore the fact that you're getting work out of the mother is enough to cover the baby as well, and therefore you don't need, therefore the owner of the original mother animal doesn't have to give schar amoloi or mezonah, and nevertheless there's no issue of ribis, says Reb Shimon Gamliel. We talked about previously that according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, you also don't need to. We talked about in the Gemara over there, you have a couple of days ago, you have on the face of it, you do have the tircha of carrying around the baby when it's too little to walk, which you don't have with the mother animal. But we said that in return for that, you're getting the animal's waste, where the Chachamim disagreed and said, because that you mafkir anyway, and therefore you can't consider that something that you're giving him. But Rav Shimon Gamliel disagreed. We said that that's good enough. We talked about over there. Tosfos says that ultimately Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam the halacha would be like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that would be good enough. And therefore, you don't have an issue of ribis once you have that kind of arrangement. Whereas other rishonim, other balei tosfos and other rishonim disagree with that and say that you would actually have to pay him something on top of that. It's not enough to just give him the glolim. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Umafriz al sadehu. Here's another din. So now we're not really going to be okay. Umafriz al sadehu. Now you're also allowed to increase over your field. It actually says the word mafriz means like to widen and make bigger, as we're going to explain in a second what that means. It comes from the word like you have prozis teish of your shalayim, that your shalayim will not just be confined within its walls. It'll be so safe, limos mashiach, that it'll spread out in all directions and not need walls anymore. The song prozis teish of your shalayim goes back to the late Chofs, when the Rebbe was pushing that point, in other words, that after the Six-Day War in particular, that your Shalayim should be spreading in all directions and there should be safety in Eretz Yisrael, which Hashem should help, there should be now as well. Anyway, so that's some mafriz then would be to increase the value of the field. You have other examples that actually brings where that Shodesh Peiresh Zayin means to increase or to go beyond. Then Rashi first says, though, that the Gersa may be mafrin with a nun, which is maloshin para verava, again, to make the field more fruitful and more productive. As we'll see in the Gemara, what that means, ve'ena choshish mishum ribis, and there's no issue of ribis with that in an arrangement that we're going to see in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, tonan abanan mafriz al sadehu ve'ena choshish. So what is that example? What do we mean by mafriz al sadehu without there being an issue? And not have to be concerned about ribis. So like this, Kate said, a person rents a field from somebody else where the din is where the deal is that he's going to give him 10 kor of wheat per year. As we talked about previously, you have there's an oris where you arrange that the oris is almost like a part owner of the field, that he's going to get a certain percentage of the crop. And then you have choicher, also known as a soicher, where instead you're going to be paying him a fixed rent per year. Strictly speaking, a choicher pays in produce, and an actual soicher would pay in money, but sometimes the Gemara uses soicher and choicher indiscriminately, as it does over here. So he's renting the field where the deal is he's going to pay him 10 kor of wheat per year. Now, one thing that means is whether the field, now some years you may have a good crop, and therefore this will be a very small percentage of the fields of the field's yield. Other years there may be a bad year and field doesn't even produce 10 kor, and then you're gonna have to go and buy wheat yourself on the open market in order to pay your rent. Anyway, so he has this arrangement. So now the soicher tells the owner of the field, ten li masayim zuz, lend me 200 zuz, va'afranasena, and I will use that 200 zuz to take care of the field. Anytime you're talking about taking care of something, Rashi explains, can be called parnasa. So here, for example, it would be that I'll use that 200 to buy fertilizer and grain for planting, and so on and so forth. And the result is that now the field is going to be more productive. Vani alav choshneim osa kurin l'shana, and instead of paying you 10 kor a year, in that case, then I'll pay you 12 kor a year. So Rashi explains that it means it's both. I'll give you back your 200 zuz, and in addition, I'm also going to give you two extra kor from the field. Now, down the face of it, that seems like ribis. It seems like he's borrowing 200 zuz and he's paying him back 200 plus two extra kor. Nevertheless, mutter. Nevertheless, it's allowed because when he gave him the 200, it's not to what it is basically he's renting from him a better field, a better quality field, and now because of that, then he's giving him a larger amount of rent. So such a thing. So such a thing as mutter. You actually have different gersois among Achronim within Rashi itself, within Rashi himself. Is it that we're saying the 200 is not really considered a loan at all? It's considered an investment in the field, and then so then when he's paying him the 200, that's part of the rental. That's not paying back a loan. So in other words, the deal is that from now on, because the field is more productive, then therefore the rent is now going to be partially in grain and partially in money. It's the rental is going to be 200, is going to be 200 zuz plus an extra 2 kur. So there are achronim who learn that way in Rashi, and then there are other achronim who learn in Rashi this first way is according to the Bach and the Prisha learn that way in Rashi. On the other hand, the Maharshal here on the Gemara and the Maharam Shrif say that no, the correct girsa in Rashi is that he's paying him, that it is in fact the 200 is the payment of a loan. But the point is that now when he adds from now on that he's going to be giving him the 2 extra kur per year is not part of the loan payment. It's rather the fact that now the field is more productive and therefore you're getting more out of it and therefore the rental of it goes up. In any case, the point is the Mishnah is saying that the Mishnah is saying briefly, and the Braisa is explaining in more detail that such a thing is allowed, and there's no issue of ribs. Aval, but the Braisa continues, ein mafriz lo yachanus v'lo yasfina. You can't make the same kind of arrangement with a store or with a boat. You can't do that, and you're going to borrow money in order to stock the store or in order to stock the boat. And then raise the rental fee accordingly, because the difference is, it actually says in the case of the field, what you're putting into it, the extra seed and fertilizer or whatever, goes directly into the field itself. It becomes the goof of the field itself, now becomes more productive. On the other hand, when it comes to the store or the boat, you're not actually improving them themselves. You're improving, you're putting merchandise into them, which is all fine and good. But nevertheless, that's still, then you have an issue of ribis for the fact that he lent you the money to do that, to buy the stock for it. And then you're going to pay him extra. And therefore, the boat itself or the store itself is not worth any more than it was before. Therefore, you have an issue of ribis. But Omer of Nachman, Omer Rav Bavur, Pom Shemafer Zachanus. Sometimes you could have that you could do this kind of arrangement for a store. For example, Lotzur Batsura. When you're borrowing the 200 to paint designs on the walls, a store, by the way, in Gemara terminology, is not just a store where you go and buy things. It's more like a combination of a store and a restaurant. So consider, for example, when you have nice artwork on the walls of restaurants, it's more likely that people are going to want to eat there. So now, if you're borrowing the money to do that, then that's the equivalent of borrowing money in order to fertilize the field better, and therefore now the place itself is worth more as a store and a restaurant, and therefore that kind of thing would be mutter, that now you're agreeing that you're going to pay more in rent because of that. Similarly, or Sfina, similarly, says Rav Nachman, the same thing with a ship. Sfina, and the same thing with a ship. You also can do that lasis lo scaria. For example, you can have that you're going to be using the money to put into the ship itself, for example, to make a sail for the ship. So again, you're improving the ship itself, not just that you're putting merchandise into it. And the Gemara explains, Chanus Lotzu Batsursa, when you use the money that you're borrowing for a store in order to paint, in order to put paintings and things on the wall. So now the Tsavu Ba'inchi, now people desire that store. Tsavi means to desire. We have in Onkelos, that's the standard word for to desire. And also, for example, when Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi, so Mephoshim on the Pasuk explain that in the simple sense, it means the desirable land. Anyway, so again, people are going to desire, people are going to want to shop and eat over there, but have an agrat fee, so therefore it makes sense. Now it fetches a higher rental fee. And same thing, sfina lasis lo iskaria, and the same thing when it comes to a ship that now you're putting on a mast and a sail on it, kiven de shapiria iskaria tvei. So it's not just the fact that before it didn't have a sail and now it does. It could even be that you're swapping out the sail for a nicer looking one. Now with a nicer sail, agrat fee, people are more likely to be attracted to the boat and to want to rent it at a higher price. So therefore, all of that, so that kind of thing, then when you're renting the boat, and the deal is I'm going to use that rental fee to put on a new sail, which is going to be more eye-catching and more people are going to want to then rent the boat. Now you're allowed to say that I'll pay more in rent because of that, and not have an issue of ribs. So in that sense, it'll be similar to the field. So in other words, Rav Nachman is saying, when we talk about you can't do this with a store or with a ship, it's not a blanket thing. It depends whether you're using it for merchandise to stock the store or the ship, or whether you're talking about to improve the store or the ship itself. Okay, so let's talk about the din of a boat, Bechlal, when you're renting out a boat. So now you have like this, when you rent out a boat, you have two different things involved. You have there's the actual rental fee you're collecting from it. You also have that's called agra, and then you also have what's called pagra, which is the fact that something may go wrong with the ship. The ship itself may sink, or it may get damaged, or whatever. You might have, as part of the conditions for the rental, that if that happens, then the renter is going to pay for that. So Sfinta, when it comes to a ship, Omar Rab, Agra Upagra. So Rab says you're allowed to charge for both. You're allowed to have in the rental contract that the guy is going to pay X amount per hour or per day or whatever for the rental of the boat. And in addition, you can have in there that if you can have a clause in there that says that if something happens to the boat, if it sinks or for whatever, if it's somehow damaged, then the renter is going to be on the hook to pay for that, and there's no issue of ribs there. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi l'Rav. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi ask Rav, why? I agra like pagra, vi pagra like agra. On the face of it, how can you be charging both? It should be, if you're charging rent, meaning it's still considered your boat, then another way, and you're renting it out, then a socha is not chayiv and onsin. So therefore, he should be potter if the boat sinks or whatever. The ipagra, and if you're going to make him pay, if you're going to make the deal that he's going to be chayev even for onsin, then in effect it means that it's not really a rental; it's rather a loan. And loy agra, then you shouldn't be entitled to collect rental for it, because then you have a problem of ribis. So in fact, the Mordechai explains. Now, the fact is, when you're renting something, you could indeed make a deal that you're going to be chayev even for onsin. It's possible for even though a socher is normally potter for onsin, he's certainly allowed to make a condition. He's certainly allowed to voluntarily accept on himself to also pay for onsin. However, the problem is that it would infringe on the dinner of ribis, and therefore he shouldn't be able to do that. And the Pnei Yeshua makes a different point that it depends whether we look at how much it was worth when he rented it versus how much it's worth later on. If we make him pay according to the amount that the boat was worth when he actually borrowed it, then there's no rental here b'chlal, then there's a sale. So how could he do that? So the Gemara says Shosik Rav. Rav was quiet. He didn't give an answer back to them. Now, we find in other places in Shas, there are places where it also says Shosik Rav, and sometimes we still say even, now Shosik Rav doesn't mean that Rav didn't have an answer. Sometimes it means that he had an answer, but he wasn't able, that he wasn't able to explain it. Here, for example, some Rishonim explain, the Ritva explains he couldn't think of an answer. The Ramban, on the other hand, says he had learned this way from his Rebbeim, and right now he couldn't find a way to answer them, but nevertheless he knew that this is the halacha. There are places in Chassidus where it talks about that this is the example of where chokhmah cannot be expressed. Rav knew with his chokhmah of Torah that this is how it has to be. Nevertheless, to be able to explain it requires not just chokhmah, but bina, and he couldn't right now bring that chokhmah, it was on such a high level, down into bina, to be able to explain it to them, but nevertheless, the chokhmah is no less true for all that. And the Gemara says, Omer of Sheshis, Sir of Sheshis, in a later generation, wondered, my time a Shosik Rav. Why was Rav quiet? Why could he not give them a valid answer? Lo shmir lehodetanya. Didn't Rav learn about what it says in a braisa in connection with the next Mishnah? Afopisha Omru, even though we learn in the next Mishnah, on Ayin Omer Beis, in Makablan Soin Barzom Yisrael, you're not allowed to make a Soin Barzol arrangement that you're from with a Jew. So that means, in other words, not Soin Barzol, we usually talk about it in connection with the Nechosim of a married woman, but the whole concept of Soin Barzol applies anywhere else as well. The idea is you're going to give, unlike the deal that we had in this Mishnah and the previous one, where you're giving him the animal to raise, and you're going to split the proceeds later on. Here we're talking about where all the achrayus is on the one who's watching the animal. So we say that if for example the animal dies or otherwise becomes completely unavailable, then he's still going to reimburse the owner, and then up until that point they're dividing the proceeds. The Mishnah says you can't do that again because they have a problem of ribis. So the Mishnah says even though you can't do that because then you have an issue of ribis, because then what he's paying you amounts to that you lent him something and he has full rights and he has full responsibility for it. That's why it's son barzel, and then he's paying you on top of that. So therefore, that's an issue of ribis. But the Mishnah continues later on. You are allowed to make such an arrangement with a goy, because after all, you're allowed to lend to a goy at ribis or borrow from him at ribis. Aval Omru, nevertheless, continues the Braisa. The Chacham did say, Hashem Para Lachaveh, right? Where we figure out the value of a para and he gives it to somebody else to raise it. But Omru Loi and the Makabel said, the one who's going to be raising the animal says, Hare Paroscha Suya Alai B'Shloshim Dinner. I'm accepting that the value of the animal currently is 30 dinner. So if I don't return the animal itself, then I'm going to have to pay you 30 dinner. And plus, I'm going to pay you for the rental fee. I'm going to pay you one sella per month, mutter. Then that kind of thing is mutter. Because he didn't figure out the value of the animal as it's worth right now. In other words, Rashi explains, let's say, for example, not this particular animal, but let's say the value of cows in general in the store goes down, and now, therefore, the animal is worth only 20, then he's not going to be paying 30, then he's paying only 20. Now, the Gemara says, wait, the lawyer saw, what do you mean he didn't make it? We just said that he calculated that it's worth 30, that it's worth 30 dinner. So Rav Shesha says what it means is that the Braisa means that he didn't figure out the value, how much it's worth while it's alive, where then he would just return the animal as is. Meaning, in other words, what he's saying is if the value of the animal goes down, just because in general prices have gone down, then when I return you the animal, I'm not responsible for anything else. However, if the animal dies, then I'm going to pay you 30 zuz, which was the value of 30 dinarim, which was the value of the animal right now. So therefore, it's not considered a halva, because there's always the possibility that he's going to return him something which is worth less than it was. Like we talked about the other day in connection with Rav Chama, you can have, for example, you lend somebody a shovel. You can well have that, fine, if the shovel breaks, he's going to return you another one. But ordinarily, you lend him a shovel, you're expecting to get back that same shovel, and the amount that it's worth more or less now doesn't make a difference, and therefore you can charge him a rental fee. We said Rav Chama made the mistake of thinking that the same thing is true as far as lending somebody money, and the difference is that money is meant to be spent. So here, Rav Sheshes is pointing out, you have a similar distinction. If you're returning the animal itself, then you don't care whether it's worth more or less at the time. Either way, you're not on the hook for anything else. Only if it dies, are we saying that you're going to pay the full amount. Well, therefore, the Braisa is saying such a thing is allowed, and that's not considered ribs. So that would prove what Rav is saying. So Rav Sheshes is wondering why was Rav quiet? Did he not know of this Braisa? Because if he knew of this Braisa, he would have had from it a solid answer to give Rav Kahana and Rav Asi and tell them the same thing over here. Then when it comes to renting a boat, what you're saying is, I'm renting the boat from you. If later on, as time goes on, the boat is worth less, then yes, I'm responsible. I'm responsible to pay for that, to return you the boat and to make up for. So if I'm returning you the boat itself, then I'm just paying you the rental. But if the boat sinks, then yes, I'm responsible to pay the full value of the boat as it is right now, and that would be exactly the same thing as in the case of the price with the animal, and no issue of ribs. Okay. So the Gemara says, so Amara Papa Hilchsa Sfina Agro Pagra. The halacha is that you can, in fact, do that. You can rent out a boat and charge a rental fee. And in addition, say that if the boat sinks or otherwise becomes unusable, that the guy is going to pay the whole thing. Like Rav said, even though Rav Asi and Rav Kahana had challenged him on that, that on the face of it, it seems like ribis. Nevertheless, the halacha is like Rav. And continues to papa, the nagu b'nei kufra, the b'nei kufra literally b'nei kufra means the tar people. Rashi explains because they apply tar to their boats to make them waterproof. So therefore, boat owners are called b'nei kufra, the people who are always working with tar. Anyway, so they have the minyag, says her papa, agra b'shas mashicha, that the rental fee they pay at the time of the mashicha. So they're going to pay as soon as they take the boat out for rental. They do they pay the rental or pagra b'shas shvira, and then they pay the amount that the boat was worth if the boat breaks. So that's the minhag. You want to ask Alter Rebbe Hoga Talia Milsa? How is that? How does it depend on minhag? If there's an issue of ribis, you can't say they have a minhag that allows them to override the din. So the answer is no. Mishum de masnisa tanya, mishum de masnisa tanya. Because the Braisa had said that it's mutter minhaga, then therefore the minhag developed among the boat owners who themselves are elucha yidin, and they want to follow the halacha. So they're doing that lamaisa. So the papa is not saying because the minhag is that way, then therefore the halacha was decided that way. But on the contrary, because the halacha is decided that way, because we have that Braisa, therefore the boat owners would do that kind of thing in practice and charge both agra and pagra, and they'd take the agra at the beginning, and they'd charge for pagra later on if the boat breaks. And again, there's no issue of ribis because it's not necessarily that there's going to be, because it's one or the other. Either he returns the boat intact. Either he returns the boat intact, and then we don't care the fact that it's worth less, or. Even though the price of boats has gone down, let's say, or it sinks or breaks, and then he's paying the full amount. Okay. So let's talk about this point about depreciation versus rental fees. So the Gemara starts off by saying, "Amr of Anan Amar Shmuel, Mois Shoy Yisoimim." When it comes to money of Yisoimim, and then they have an apotropos taking care of things for them. You're allowed to lend out their money at ribis in order that they should make a profit. The Rashba makes a point. In other words, it's true you're not allowed to. Now the children themselves are not yet chayev and mitzvahs. On the other hand, it's true that you're not allowed to cause them to do an iser. But here you're not really causing them to do an iser themselves because they're not actually doing any maaser. So therefore, Rav Anan holds that such a thing would be mutter. As far as the apotropos, it's not his own money, so therefore he's not over on anything either. In fact, Tosfos says that now the Gemara is going to ask why. The Gemara is going to ask how you could do such a thing. The Gemara could have asked a better question: aren't you being over that the other person who borrows the money from them is going to be over on giving ribis, and therefore you're doing lifnei ivul osit and michshol? But Tosfos says Rav Anan. First of all, the Gemara may have a better question, but second of all, Rav Anan may figure only if when can we say lifnei ivul? Only if the only when the malva is also to lend out at ribis, then the loiva is also to pay ribis. But here, where Rav Anan thought the malva, meaning that is to say the apotropos on behalf of the yisoyim, was allowed to do it, then Rav Anan figured there's no iser on the loiva. But omele Rav Nachman says, how could you possibly think that? Mishum de yasmi ninu safinu lahu isura. Just because they're yisoyim and we want to look out for their benefit, does that mean we're going to cause that we're going to give them an iser? We're going to actually cause them to be over ultimately on the issue of ribis. On the contrary, yasmi de achli de lavdid hu, when yisoimim eat something that doesn't belong to them, in this case where they have no business taking ribis, lezlu boser shivkaihu, they deserve to just go follow the one who left them behind. In other words, let them follow their father to the Beis HaKvaris, meaning, in other words, better that it's what explains if the only choice is that they're going to die of hunger because they don't have a way of earning they don't have a way of earning money and getting money for their food, and the only alternative is for them to do an isser, then yeah, we're going to have to allow them to suffer hunger. We can't cause them to do an isser for this reason. So you can't say that because you want to look out for these simim and you want to increase their wealth and preserve it for the future when they're adults themselves, and therefore you're going to allow them to do an isser. So emily izu. So tell me izu gufu d'ovda hechi hava. What was the exact case that Shmuel Paskin that caused you to think that it means that he allows you to lend money of yisomim at actual ribis? The word izu, usually in the Gemara, it's izi. There's two explanations. Based on Rashbam in Bereshis, there are Mephoshim who explain that it means, like we say in English, so or then or something like that. So you would say in English, so tell me. So the Aramaic, the Hebrew equivalent in there that you find in a number of places in Tanakh is Eifoi. Me Eifoi who atzod Sayid, for example, Yitzchok says to Yaakov, and it means says to Esav rather. So then, who was it that brought me food before? The word Ezu then, the word Eifoi in Hebrew, and Ezu in English, and then or so in English, all like filler words, like to join one part of a sentence to another. And then Marashal brings that there are those who explain that Izu or Izi means my friend. So that means, tell me, my friend, what was the actual story? Omalei, sort of Onan says like this: Ahu Duda. There was a large pot to have Dibnei Ma'ukva that belonged to the children of Ma'ukva to have a Bei Mar Shmuel, and Mar Shmuel, which is Shmuel, the Amora, was taking care of it for them. So in other words, while Ma'ukva and Shmuel were alive, they were good friends. We find in various places in the Gemara they learned together. Ma'ukva was a Talmud of Shmuel. Shmuel served on Ma'ukva's based in. Now when Ma'ukva passed away, then Shmuel was the apotropos for the Yisomim, at least as far as this part. So now he would rent it out to people that they could use it, and then he'd collect money on behalf of the Yisomim for it. Tokil v'yohivle, before he rented it out, he would weigh the pot, how much it worth, how much it weighs now. And when he got it back, tokil v'shokile, he would weigh it again, where usually when you use a pot, it loses a certain amount of weight. Or not usually, but it can lose a certain amount of weight by virtue of using it, and he would charge a shokel agra, a shokel pachsa, and then Shmuel would charge them the rental fee as well as the depreciation of it. So now Rav Onan figures that that amounts to ribis. So therefore, there's both agra and pachsa. So he argues like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi argued before, it should be one or the other. Either he's collecting a rental fee or he's collecting for the depreciation. How could he be collecting both? So therefore, sort of Onan figured that therefore that amounts to ribs. The Rashba and the Ritva point out, to be sure, this is only Ribis de Rabbanan, but Rabbanan and figured once you're allowing them to do Ribis de Rabbanan, then it may be that Shmuel wouldn't have a problem. After all, the whole point about behind Ribis de Rabbanan is we want to make a gedur, we want to siyog la Torah around the issue of Ribis Medaraisa. If we're not going to make that by Yisamim, then Rabbanan and figured that Bechlau, you're allowed to lend out their money at actual Ribis. But Amalei, Rav Nachman answers back, Rav Anan, no, that's it. You're misunderstanding that. That kind of thing, I feel b'diknoni nami shori l'meva. That kind of thing would be allowed to do even for people who are older and have beards and they're no longer called yisomim. The definition of yisomim and halacha is when they're too little to be managing their own affairs. Here, to do this kind of arrangement that we just said, as we just said before with the boat, would be mutu even for mature adults. Because after all, the Yisomim are accepting on themselves. You have to consider there's also a loss in the value of the pot as a whole. It's not just fine. You're charging for the fact that now it weighs an ounce less of copper, and you're going to charge for that. But after all the rest of the copper of it also is weakened by the fact that some of it was burnt off. Whenever you have burnt copper, is going to be worth less than fresh copper, and that they're keeping on themselves. The more that copper gets burnt, the less it's worth. So it's not just that you're It's not to, so on the one hand, you're charging for the fact that it actually weighs less, but you're not charging for the fact that the whole copper of it now is worth less because it was heated up and partially burnt off. So therefore there's not an issue. Therefore, there's not an issue of ribis. Tosfos discusses that in light of the din that we had before about the boat, the same thing. In other words, that we said before, as far as paying for the boat, you're not paying for the fact that the boat gets used and that it's a wooden boat, as boats were back then, and it's in the water, and over time it depreciates in the water. You're not paying for that. After all, we said if the boat breaks, then you're paying for the whole thing. But if you have that, if you rented the boat for a month or a year or something, and by the time you bring it back, it's spent a lot of time in the water, and therefore it's depreciated because of that. You're not paying for that, so therefore, and that's fine. That's why it's allowed to charge both agra and pagra. So the same thing over here. So Nachman tells Rav Onan, you made a mistake. Then you misunderstood. In that case, there's no ribis involved at all. You certainly can't say that. You certainly can't learn from that that you're allowed to lend out money of discernment ribis. Okay. Well, the Gemara continues talking about what we do with the fact is we do want to have over time, after all, the things of Yisomim are going to get used up. So we do want to have something to offset that, something where they can earn money. So how can we do that? So Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rabba Bar Yosef Achoma, Amar Rav Sheshes, Moris Shal Yisomim. A rabbi by Yosef Achoma, by the way, would apparently be a son, would apparently be a brother of Rava. Rabbi Yosef Achoma is Rava's father, and here you'd have Rabba by Yosef Achoma. So therefore, it would be a brother of Rava. On the other hand, there's a girsa that they have in early prints of the Gemara and in Kisviyad or whatever, that Omer Rabba, Omer Rabbi Yosef Achoma, Omer of Sheshes, and in that case, it's regular Rabba in the Gemara saying in the name of Rabbi Yosef Achoma, who is Rava's father. Anyway, so Mois Shor Yisayim says in the name of Rav Sheshes, Mois Shor Yisayim, Mutu Lahal Voisim, Kodav L'Schav V'Rochak L'Hefzid. Now, what you are allowed to do is, we learned earlier, that when it comes to making, for example, an iska, you can't do when you have, you're investing, you're lending money to somebody as an investment, and he's going to use it to run a store or whatever. You can't have that you're going to exactly balance the risk and the reward and say that he's going to that you're going to exactly divide the proceeds and you're exactly going to divide what happens if there's losses, because then you have a problem of ribis because he's taking care of the store for you without he's doing it on your behalf, and therefore he's doing it because you lent him money. Therefore, we said you had to pay him a wage, you have to pay him a kapoyo bottle, or the various other possibilities that we talked about the other day. And in general, that's true that you can't do this kor of the schar of kor of lahefsid. It has to be usually. It has to be that you're giving the guy who's borrowing the money, you're giving him some greater advantage. That way he's working on behalf of that rather than he's working on behalf of the fact that you lend him money. But here, when it comes to Yisraelim, you are allowed. The apotropos can lend out the money. He can lend it out on a condition where the guy is going to use the money for an iska and give them their half of the proceeds. But if there are losses, that the yisomim won't have to pay anything. And so the yisomim are close to the, usually they're going to get a schar, but they're not going to be on the hook for any of the hefsid. So you're not allowed to charge actual ribis. You're still not allowed to lend out their money at actual ribis, because that would be like we said before, you still can't cause them to do an actual isu daraisa. But here where it's only ribis dirabanan, so that it's only avak ribis, so therefore the chachamim are going to allow it on behalf of yisoyim. Does that mean that you could do anything of yisoyim, any kind of ribis dirabanan? The Rambam holds yes, and the Ritva holds no. Here it's more of a special case because the kor of the schav rochak lahefsid is, there's more reason to be moderate than other kinds of ribis dirabanan. Okay, so you're allowed to do that, but ordinarily not, because ordinarily it's avak ribis. So the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, That if a person lends out his money as an iska in a way where he's gonna where he's more or less guaranteed profits, but not guaranteed, but it's much more likely there's gonna be profits because if any usually there are gonna be profits from a business and he's going to get some, the rochak lahefsed, and he's far away from the hefsed that he's not taking responsibility for any of the hefsed is on the borrower, Russia, then he's acting as a Russia because he's being over on ribis d'rabban. On the other hand, korov lahefsid, v'rochak l'schar, if he does the opposite, where he's willing to accept on himself any hefsid, and he's not going to accept himself any schar, chosid, then he's a chosid for doing so. He's going with nim mishuras adin. Rashi learns, in other words, that it means he's not getting any of the proceeds from it at all. The Ritva asks him in that kind of chosid shoyte. Then in that case, I mean, shouldn't he at least be trying to get some kind of thing from putting money into an iska? So the Ritva actually says that what it means is, in other words, that he gets a lesser percentage than he otherwise would. I mean, ikra din, he'd be allowed to a certain percentage of the profits, let's say 1/3, and instead he voluntarily takes less than that. And then there's a different explanation from the Rid that says that you can be talking about a person who doesn't want to take gifts and doesn't want to get loans, and therefore he's having a very difficult life. So you're doing him a favor in a way where you're kort of lahefsed and rochak l'schar and giving him and then you're doing it for the purpose of having him be able to have a parnosa b'kavod. So then you're a chosid for doing that. What about if he's close to both of them? So he's taking a certain percentage of the proceeds, and also he's on the hook for a certain percentage of the losses. Rochik mizeh mizeh, distant from one another. Zuri midas koladim. That's the way most people do. That's not an issue because again, then you have. In other words, what you can do is, like this we said before, when you have an iska, ordinarily it's considered half milvan, half pikadin, but you're not obligated to consider it half and half. You can consider it instead, for example, 1/3 and 2/3, 1/3 milva and 2/3 pikadin, or whatever. You can make whatever percentages you want and then say that the risk and the reward are going to be balanced, and you pay the guy for kapoil bottle or scharamolo or mazono or whatever, and that avoids the issue of ribis. More on the topic of money of Yisaimim. Omale Rabbi Rab Yosef, Hani Zuzi Diyasmi, Hefi Abdin Lahu. What do we do with money of Yisaimim to prevent it from getting lost? So here we said that you can lend it out at Ribis Dirabanan, or at least certain kinds of Ribis Dirabanan. What else can we do with that money to prevent them from spending it like this over time? I mean, they need to eat or whatever. We need to make sure that they don't just waste it when they're little. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, "Mesvinin lohu beidina." We're going to put that money in beisdin in escrow. V'yavinin lohu zuzuzuzan, and then we give it to them a zuz at a time as they need it for their expenses. Omalei, Rabbi says, the problem is v'hokar kal yakarna. Over time, the keren is going to be used up. You don't just want to have that. Fine, you don't want to have. They're going to go blow it on something big as yisaimim. But the point is, we also want to have that. We want it to increase so that by the time they're older and they're able to take it over, they have something to offset all the money that's been spent on them over the years. So Omalei, sort of Yosef says, "Mar hefi avid nu." So you tell me, you're the head of your local base. Then how do you do things? Omalei, so Rabbi says as follows, but kin and gavra, we're going to search for a person. Does that mean that Beistin does that, or does that mean that the apotropos does it? Anyway, we look for a person, the isle to have a pricha, where he has in his possession broken pieces of gold, meaning a scrap gold. The point of that is that as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, there's no simon on it. Therefore, we can be sure it's his. If it was gold kalim, it might be somebody else was masked by him, and it's not actually his. When it's scrap gold, there's no simon on it, and therefore it's very unlikely that somebody gave it as a pikadon. More likely, it actually belongs to him. So that shows, in other words, that he has assets, where now if we need to collect from him on behalf of the assignment, we're going to have what to collect from. We take the gold from him. We take the gold from him as a mashkon. That now we're going to give him the Yisomim's money to invest. So we're going to take that from him as a mashkon. The Marshal actually takes those words out of the Gemara, and he explains. Doesn't mean we don't have to take the gold as a mashkon. We just have to know that he has it in his possession, so we know we have what to collect from later on. Anyway, we give him the Yisomim's money on such an arrangement that we said that if there's that if there's income from it, then he's going to split the income with them, and if there's losses, then he's going to bear the losses. And we said, even though that's a ribis d'rabbanan, and for on behalf of Yisomim, we allow that. Now it has to dav to be scrap gold. Avol dover mesuyim loy. But if he has something definitive, something an actual gold keli or whatever, that doesn't necessarily work. Don't want pikadon inu, because those gold keli might actually be a pikadon. They may not actually be his, and then we may not have a guarantee of being able to collect from him later. And the problem is, maybe a pikadon, but also mori yoiv simanim v'shakulei. Later on, the owner of the keli might come and give simanim and take it back, and therefore you can't be sure that it's his. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here, bechlal, why would that be a problem? Anytime somebody comes with simanim, you on the other hand can claim, yes, you have simanim, but I bought it from you. So why wouldn't this guy be able to claim if they come with simanim? He would say, yeah, but it's not that you lost it or something, and I found it. You sold it to me. No, you don't always have to have proof for buying metalplin, but so Tosfos discusses in some detail. Let's say, for example, you could have they come after he passes away, and they come to claim to the Yisoimim that your father found it, and it's mine, and they don't have a proof one way or the other. They don't know to claim that their father bought it. And then maybe what happens? Tosfos also says, for example, you can have Adim come and say that he was mafkid something with him. And now when this guy comes and says it's mine, I was mafked it by you. So now when he brings Adim, so then Basedin is going to tell him, bring out the keli, and the Adim may recognize it. And again, it may turn out that it wasn't his after all. That's why we're saying you need to have him square. He has scrap gold or gold nuggets or whatever in his possession like that, where therefore there's no simon on them. Nobody's going to be mafked them by him in the first place, because then they're not going to be able to get it back. What kind of simonim are they going to be able to offer? And therefore that works. So that's the thing. So if the apotropos himself is capable of doing that, so much the better. The Rambam holds that you're right. As far as this kind of thing, the apotropos is responsible for taking care of the day-to-day needs of the Yisoimim. But here we're talking about investing the Yisoimim's money, then therefore we need a person who has these qualities. So the Rambam learns that based in themselves is going to look for such a person. The Rosh holds that the apotropos himself has the job. The tour actually rather says so. Yeah, it ends up being the Rambam versus the tour, and therefore them, and ultimately the Mechaber versus the Rambam. Is it up to the based in to look for such a person, or is it up to the apotropos to look for such a person? Okay. Well, that's all very well if we can find somebody who has that kind of gold of scrap gold. What if we can't find such a person? Should we allow the Yisoimim's money to just get frittered away over time? We still need to do something to invest their money. We can't. It's very nice if we can find somebody who has these kinds of qualities, but what if not? What's our backup plan? Rather, Ravashi says, we look for a person whose nechosim are at peace and quiet, meaning there's no irur on his field. Nobody's claiming on any of these fields, on any of his fields, that they belong to them, that he stole them or bought them illegally or whatever. Umeheman, and that he's trustworthy. We know that he's a trustworthy person. Veshama dina daraisa. He listens to the dinim of the Torah. He's a frum elchayid. V'lem kabel shamta derabanan. And the chachamim never had to put him in chayim for disobeying Basedin. And then Basedin gives him the money as an iska, and he accepts the deal that he's going to pay, that he's going to pay the that he's going to pay the Yisoimim, that he's going to give them their share in the profits and accept the losses on himself. So even he doesn't have this gold, these gold nuggets or whatever, it's still good enough because we know he has a reputation, and we see that he's an honest erlich person who, therefore, him we can trust with this kind of thing, says Rav Ashi.
He has the full loss himself.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, because after all, it's on behalf of Yisoimim, so therefore we don't want to charge Yisoimim the loss. Ordinarily, we're saying this would be avakri, this kind of arrangement would be avakribis, but here, for the sake of Yisoimim, we're allowing. And he himself, I guess, he's going to figure. I mean, it's a mitzvah to do this on behalf of Yisoimim, so therefore he's willing to accept that that responsibility.
Father's family.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, getting back to other cases of ribis involving animals. The Mishnah says, "Ein mekablan soin barzol miyisrael." You're not allowed to accept a tsoin bauzel arrangement from a yid. Where again, so now tsoin bauzel literally means iron sheet. We call it that when it comes to the nechassim of a married woman, for example. There, what it is it's somewhat similar to here. There's no loan involved, but we have the husband is accepting achrayus on these nechassim. The value of them is actually written into the ksuba. And the husband is accepting, they now belong to me in terms of that, not just like nichsa malorg, that the payrus belong to me, but the actual goof belongs to me. But eventually, if I die or if I divorce you, then I'm going to reimburse you for whatever's lost or missing or depreciated or whatever. So therefore, tsoin bauzel, it's an iron sheet, you're guaranteed your investment back. So now, when it comes to make that arrangement with another yid, so you have a problem, then you have a problem of ribis over there, because again, the makabel is accepting full achrayus on it. So therefore now he's taking care of the animals and giving you something extra and giving you the fact that he's taking all the responsibility for the losses on his own. In fact, Rashi says there's really no chidush in this part of the Mishnah. The chidush is really the continuation where it says you're allowed to make such an arrangement with a goy. So the problem is that's ribis. Now Rashi is explaining that the point is with Tsoin Bauzel, he's accepting 100% of achrayus, and therefore that's the problem. Tosfos disagrees and brings several questions on Rashi. So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that no, what we're talking about over here. So first of all, according to Rashi, it would come out again that it's not a problem of ribis d'oraisa. It's a problem only of ribis d'rabbanan. But nevertheless, ribis d'rabbanan is still d'rabbanan. It's still also. On the other hand, Tosfos disagrees that no, what it means is the arrangement with Tsoin Bauzel. It's not so much that they divide the profits equally, it's rather that he's arranging every year he's going to give him a certain amount as like the rental or whatever you want to call it, whether there's profits that year or not. So therefore it amounts to ribis d'oraisa, actually. They agree that we arrange that he's gonna accept responsibility if the sheep die or whatever, plus that he's gonna pay X amount per year. So now you have a problem with ribis d'oraisa. So Alva Makablan son Bowser and Akum, but you are allowed to accept such a thing from a goy because you're allowed to lend it, you're allowed to lend to a goy at ribis or borrow from him at ribis. Which we'll see the details about that in the Gemara. One point is, Makosha make an interesting point. You know, we talked about at the beginning of the Perek. What's the idea behind the din of ribis anyway? Is it a subset of the din of gezel? Now we know gezel goy also. We learned in Bava Kamma, we had a whole sugya on the subject, you're not allowed to steal from a goy. So then why should ribis be mutter with a goy? So one answer I think that Ramban gives is it's a matter of reciprocation. A goy is not allowed to steal from you. You're not allowed to steal from him. On the other hand, there's nothing preventing a goy from lending you at ribis, and it's perfectly allowed under their laws. Therefore, it's only fair that we under our laws should be able to lend them at ribis. And it's not even, the point is, in other words, it's not like ribis is a mean thing to do, which you wouldn't be allowed to do to a goy. It's a matter of, if you're lending to your own family member, you're not going to charge them ribis, because you're going to understand it as a matter of milas chasadim. Fine, the Ebishta expects that you treat a fellow yid as your family member. A goy, you have to treat him decently, but there's nothing wrong with charging ribis to a stranger, so therefore you're allowed to do that. The loivin mehen malvin osin beribis, and you're allowed to borrow from a goy and lend him at ribis. V'chein beger toshav, and the same thing as far as a ger toshav is the same thing. You even though you have a mitzvah lachayosa, unlike a regular goy, you have a mitzvah to help him keep alive, like we have in Parshas Behar, ger v'soshav v'chayimach. But nevertheless, you're still allowed to lend him at ribis. Another din, Malvi Yisrael Ma'osav Shal Akum Midas Akum. Now, suppose you have a yid is managing the money of a goy, and he's going to take money that belongs to that goy and lend it to another yid Midas Oved Kachavim on the understanding of the goy. So, in other words, he's doing it as the shliach of the goy, basically. So then that's allowed. Avaloi Midas Yisrael, but not without checking with the goy first, because one yid can't lend another one in a at ribis. Later on, we're going to learn tomorrow, Bas Hashem, what's considered midas akum and what's not. It's not so simple. And in fact, you have the Gemara sometimes mentions, we had talked about at the beginning of the parak, Toila Ma'osa Benochri, where a Jew claims that this money that's in my possession is really a goy's and I'm just managing it for him, and he lends it at ribis, and the Eibishter just says, I know the truth, and I'm gonna take care of such a person. So the Gemara says, as far as the tsoin bauzel, lememra de birshusa de makabel kaima. So are you telling me And that when it comes to tzoin barzel, it's considered completely in the reshus of the mekabel, and therefore that in effect it's as though he owns the, as it's as if he owns the animal completely, and therefore if he's giving him a portion of the profits, then it's considered ribis or a minu. But I have a contradiction. We learn in Masechta Bechoros in connection with the dinim of a bechor of an animal, I'm a kabel tzoin barzel man anochrim, when you accept tzoin barzel, an arrangement of tzoin barzel from a goy. Then any babies born to these animals are potter from bechora. So meaning, in other words, Rashi says that the mother is potter from bechora if she gives birth to a bechora. It's not kodesh, obviously, because the mothers themselves belong to the goy, and therefore there's no mitzvah bechora. What we mean is that even when it comes to the babies, whereas we said half of them are going to belong to the Yisrael and half to the Goy, even the ones that belong to the Yisrael are still going to be potter from Bechor. So that's what we have to figure out. So in other words, what we mean is, in other words, there's three generations of animal. You receive from the Goy animal A, it becomes pregnant and has a baby. No question it's potter from Bechor, because the mother itself still belongs to the Goy. Now that baby herself grows up and eventually becomes pregnant and gives birth to male C, who is a bechor. Nevertheless, you're potter. So the pastors, the idea is because it's still considered to be in the reshus of the goy. If it was considered in your reshus, the yid, then it should be chayiv in bechor. So the answer is amar abaye like kasha hod makabla le onse v'zoyla. The difference is the yid accepting on himself responsibility for onsin as well as for depreciation in the value of the animal. That, in other words, that. Or rather, the noisin, that the goy is willing to bear that loss. If there is an onus to the animal, or if the value of the animal goes down, then the goy is willing to bear that loss. Well, therefore, he's considered a part owner of the animal. Therefore, it's part of from bechora. Anytime a goy is a part owner of an animal, then there's no mitzvah bechora. Whereas our Mishnah, you're talking about where the noisin, the owner of the animals, is not willing to bear the risk of onse bezoila. So therefore, now it's completely in the reshus of the makabel, and therefore you have an issue of ribis if it's with a fellow yid. Omalei Rava, but Rava says, how is that supposed to work? If the owner of the animal is willing to bear the risk of onse bezoila, tzoin barzel korislei. How can you call such a thing tzoin barzel? The whole definition of tzoin barzel is that it's barzel, looks like iron. It's a guaranteed thing that you're going to get back your original investment. If the owner was willing to bear the onse bezoila, that's not barzel anymore. How can you call it tzoin barzel? But oid, and besides that, Rava says, you have another problem with that anyway. Ad toni sefer, because then in that case, in our Mishnah, when it says, but you are allowed to accept a tzon bazel arrangement from a goy, if you're going to tell me, Abaya, that it depends whether the owner is willing to bear the risk of onse bezoila, liflig b'didei, then the Mishnah doesn't have to distinguish between a yid and a goy. It can make a distinction between a yid himself, within a yid himself, with a yiddish owner of the animal. And say, when would it be also when the owner is not willing to bear the risks of onse bezoila? Because then you have a problem of ribis. But if he is shaper dummy, then it would be fine, and the Mishnah wouldn't even have to mention b'chalal anything about a distinction between a yid and a goy. So therefore, that implies, says Rava, any kind of tzoin barzel arrangement with a yid means automatically that it belongs to the makabel, and therefore there's ribis involved when he's giving something back to the noisin. So how does this work? In fact, both our Mishnah and the one in Bechoros are talking about where the owner has not accepted responsibility for onse bezoila. The reason why by Bechor the din is different than it is in our Mishnah, where, in other words, the implication is in the case of the Bechor, it's not considered the Yid's animal, it's considered the Goy's animal. It's not so much that it's considered the Goy's animal. The reason why the babies, even the third generation, are potter from Bechor, given to Elo Yohiv Zuzi, if the Yid does not pay the amount of money that he's supposed to pay the Goy, Osi Nochri Tofis Lola Behemoth. The goy is going to come and seize those animals, the third one, the third generation, as payment. So therefore, there's a shibud on them. The goy has a certain shibud on those animals. So therefore, you have the hand of a goy involved over here. In other words, the goy has a shibud on the animal to the extent that wherever you have a goy's hand, wherever you have a goy's possession, involved over there, potter min habechora, then he would be potter, then the animal is potter from bechora, even if right now it's not in his reshus. It has to be that it belongs 100% to the yid. So Tosfos explains, in other words, that you have other cases. For example, you have, let's say, a case where you owe the animal's taxes, where if you don't pay your taxes, then the Goyish authorities are going to seize the animal. The difference is basically it belongs to the Yisrael, but you have a shibud on it, and you could always pay him off with money. But over here, to begin with, the animal did belong to the Goy, and as long as the Goy has that koyach, then he's his koyach includes that if you don't pay him the amount that it's worth, then he's going to take it. So therefore, it's yad nochri be'emtzah. In other words, it's considered to begin with. He had a certain degree of ownership of it, but he's willing to relinquish that ownership in order if you pay him money, as opposed to with taxes, where it's the other way around. To begin with, it belongs to you, but the goy still has a certain interest in it.
Once
you paid him, the animal was already born. So at the time when it was born, the goy still had a part interest in it, and therefore it was potter from bechora. You can have a case even where technically, according to the law, the goy wouldn't have the right to grab the animal, but he's prone to do that anyway. Then that would be enough for it to be considered yad nochri be'emtza and to make it potter from bechor. Maybe let's try to do a little more piece of it here. So now we mentioned in the Mishnah that you are allowed to lend to goyim and borrow from goyim at ribis. However, the Gemara points out it's not so simple. There's a pasuk that says mar b'hoine v'neshech v'sarvis, when a person increases his wealth with neshech and tarvis, which, as we said at the beginning of the parak, essentially mean two different words for the same thing. They both mean ribis. L'choin and dalam yikvitzenu. He's going to end up gathering it for the one who has rachmanus on the who does favors to the poor. So my l'choin and dalim. Who is this? So in other words, he's going to end up losing the wealth. It's going to end up in the hands of a choinen dalim. So my choinen dalim, who is this choinen dalim? Amar Rav ben Shabur Malka. For example, King Shabur of Persia. So he would take money from Jews and taxes and whatever, and he would use them for public works projects, for government projects or whatever, and give them to Goyim. The Goyim are called Dalim in the sense that Rashi says they're Dalim in a mitzvah. They're poor in that they don't have mitzvahs. So therefore, in other words, the Pasuk is warning that if a person thinks to increase his wealth with ribis, it's going to wind up in the hands of the government, and the government's going to end up using it on behalf of other people. Actually, the Shittim of Kubetzis brings over here also a point. Sometimes in the Gemara, Shabur Malka is also a nickname for Shmuel, the Amora, because Shmuel was the king in Torah, just like the Habdul, Shabur was the king in Persia. So it would mean that such wealth ends up in the hands of tzaddikim. So the Chassam Sofer actually explains that it may mean the Gemara here is going to be talking about even where it's only also derabbanan. So we can talk about when the ribis was daraisa, then Hashem arranges that eventually that wealth falls into the hands of tzaddikim, such as Shmuel. And when it was ribis from a yid, then Hashem arranges that it falls eventually into the hands of tzaddikim, such as Shmuel. And when it was ribis from a goy, then Hashem arranges, which, as the Gemara is going to say, you're still not supposed to do, then Hashem arranges that it's going to fall into the hands of the government, and they're going to use it on behalf of goy. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amali Huna. So Rav Nachman says that Huna, which is to say Rav Huna, explained to me, lo nitzrucha ela dafilu ribis to oid gechavim. The chiddush of that is even we're talking about taking ribis from goyim. So even though on the face of it you're allowed to do that, nevertheless the pasuk is warning that such money is going to end up in the hands of the government. You the yid are not going to benefit. Are not going to end up benefiting. Well, the Gemara says Eisvei Rav L'Rav Nachman. What about the pasuk says La Nochri Sashich? The pasuk says that you're allowed to do ribis to a goy. My Tashich Lav Sishoich. Doesn't that mean that you're allowed to bite him with ribis? That you're allowed to charge a goy ribis? So, in fact, the Rambam actually listed it as one of the 613 mitzvahs, lahalbis lenochri beribis. The Ravid disagrees and says it's not really, it's an essa from which comes a loises. If a yid lends another yid at ribis, not only is over on various loises, he's also over on that essa, because the pasuk is saying implicitly, lend to a goy at ribis, implying but not to a yid. But nevertheless, it sounds like the pasuk is telling you you're allowed to lend a goy at ribis, and maybe even it's a mitzvah to do so. So what are you telling me? That he's going to end up losing his money, that Hashem is going to punish him by losing his money from that. So Rav Nachman answers, loy, sashich. It means the Torah is telling you permission to borrow from a goy at ribis.
Well, the Gemara says, loisagi delab hochi. Why would the Torah be telling you inevitably it has to be so? Is the pasuk telling you you have a mitzvah to give ribis to a goy? And if you can manage to borrow from a goy for free, then shouldn't you be able to do that? Is the pasuk implying that if you're going to borrow from a goy, it must be a ribis? So the Gemara says, no, all it means is la pukia chicha deloy. No, all it means is the Torah is telling you, you can do ribis, you can lend, you can borrow money from a goy at ribis. Implicitly, though, you can't do that with a yid. If a yid borrows from another yid at ribis, then he's over on an essay as well. So the Gemara says, what do you need? Achicha. You don't need a posik to be medayik from that. Behed yiksibbe, or to behed yikosibbe, la achicha laisashin. The posik very clearly says you're not allowed to give ribis to another yid. And the answer is okay, lava all the essa aloysis. That means that if a yid gives ribis to another yid, then he's over on an essa analysis. So yes, the posse can still be saying, though, that you're not allowed to lend a goy at ribis. You're allowed to borrow him from him at ribis, but if you then borrow from a yid at ribis, then you're over on an essa and an aloysis. Okay, but the question still is though that what do you mean that you're not allowed to lend a goy at ribis? Aisve, so Rava asked Rav Nachman, what about? We said in the Mishnah, loivin mehenu malvin oisin beribis v'chitigertosha. We said you are allowed to lend to a goy or borrow from a goy at ribis, and the same thing with a gertosha. So what are you telling me that Hashem is going to punish such a person and cause that he's going to lose his wealth? The answer is amen of chia breder huna lo nitzrucha el b'chadei chaya. The Mishnah is saying you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to lend a goy at ribis where you need it for your basic parnasa. But more than that, the chachamim are going to answer it because then you're going to get too closely associated with the goy. The Maharam Shif explains that a ribis is something a person would very, very much want. So if he finds the only people he can lend to at ribis are goyim, then he's going to come and associate with them more and more in order to be able to collect ribis, which a person has a big yetzahara for, and therefore he's going to get more and more involved with the goy. So therefore, some midir rabbanon, the chachamim are asking it where he doesn't need it for kedei chayim. Ravina Omar, chacham b'tamar chacham maskinim. Ravina says another answer when the Mishnah says you're allowed to lend a goy at ribis is specifically allowing a tamar chacham. Time of my gozer rabbanon shama yumin b'maisa, because why do the chachamim to begin with say that you shouldn't lend a goy is because shama yumin b'maisa, because you might learn from his ways because you're going to associate with him too much. Well, tamar chacham who but given the Taman Chacham, who lo yomad b'maisav, since he's a Taman Chacham, he's not going to learn from the goy's ways, and therefore the Chacham don't have to make a gzeirah. Tosfos, in fact, brings up a point over here that when the Torah says that something is mutter, the Chachamim don't have the power. The Chachamim are not usually going to answer it. There's a famous Taz that says not only they're not usually going to, the Chachamim, in fact, will not declare such a thing. The Chachamim cannot declare something also, which clearly says in the Torah. The Taz famously says. So therefore, that's what's bothering the Gemara over here. If the Torah clearly says l'nochri sashir, that you're allowed to lend a goy at ribis, then how can the Chachamim answer? And we're saying they're not answering it across the board. They are making certain exceptions. They're saying it is allowed, but only under certain limited conditions. Only b'chdei chayav, or only a tamad chach. And the Gemara finishes off with another point on that. Ikka demasna l'hadr Rav Huna aha. There are some who learn that Rav Huna's statement about the chiddush, about ribis of goyim, was not about this posik that a person is going to lose his wealth for lending to a goy at ribis, but rather a different point. The Tanya of Yosef, Rav Yosef teaches a braisa. The posik says, in kesef talbes oni as amyas oni imach. The posik says, if you lend money to my people, to the poor with you, that means ami v'nochri. If you have a choice between lending money to my people, to a fellow yid, or to a goy, ami kodim, then you should first lend to your people, to a yid. Oni v'oshu, if you have an oni or an oshu who both need a loan, oni kodim, then the oni gets first precedence. Ani yecha v'ani yeircha, if you have a choice between an oni in your city and an oni in a different city, ani yecha kodim, the ones in your, or ani yecha meaning your relative, and v'ani yeircha, other people in town, ani yecha kodim, your own relatives come first. Ani yeircha, ani yeircha kodim, and if you have between the people of your city and the people of a different city, then the ones in your city go first. So now, when Omamar, Ami Benochri, Ami Koidim, if we say that if you have a choice between lending to a yid or to a goy, the yid comes first, the question is pshita. Isn't that obvious? You're being Mekayim a mitzvah by lending to a yid. And there, Omer of Nachman, Omer Lihuna, now on that would be the second version that Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Huna, lo nitzucha da'afilu v'nochri b'ribis v'yisrael b'chinam, that the chiddush is, even if you have a chance to lend to the goy at ribis, and meanwhile to the yid, you're going to have to be lending for free because you can't take ribis, and therefore you're going to think it should be better to lend to the goy so I can make a profit. Nevertheless, the Torah is stressing you, still give the yid precedence, even though you're not going to be able to collect ribis from that. So according to that second version, it's not so much that you're not allowed to lend to a goy at ribis. You may well be allowed to, but and there's no problem. You're going to lose your wealth because of that. But it's rather that if you have a choice, the alternative is to lend to a yid for free, then you have to give that. You have to do that. Rather, you have to do that in preference.